You announced your retirement then, Brian, from the game at such a young age. I suppose the reports out there was that the injuries took their toll, but that's not the full story. You tell me, Brian.
No, it's not. It's a bit of a misconception, and I didn't come out to say why I did retire, but the reason why I did retire was due to illness, not injury. It's kind of a really dark, dark period in my life, from, say, July up until December. I was struggling a lot with football and with lots of other things, and mainly my mental health. And on the 15th of December this year, I attempted suicide. And then I was brought to hospital and then transferred to the Priory Hospital in Altrincham, and I spent 3 months there. And I did 12 sessions of ECT, electroconvulsive therapy. So it was a really dark period, but one that, like, genuinely, I feel lucky to have a second chance at life. It's something that not a lot of people know. Obviously, my mom, my dad, my girlfriend, my close friends and stuff, but nobody else really knows that. And I just was kind of torn between, when you asked me to do the interview, obviously you thought it was because of injuries as well. And
yeah,
I was torn between doing the interview or not, because I didn't want it to, I don't want to come across as being dramatic or having an excuse for the reason why I retired. And that's not the case. And the reason that I agreed to do the interview was to, I suppose, if I could help at least one more person and make sure that they didn't make the same mistakes that I did, because it wasn't like I didn't have a close-knit family or a good support network. I really did. I had such a good support network. But when you're in that state of mind, I don't think a lot of things can stop you from making silly mistakes like that. When I speak to people about it, about mental health and depression and everything, like, it's a cancer of the mind. Like, it's so difficult to get over it, I suppose.
Yeah. Is there more awareness, do you think, now of people, you know, suffering from depression, I suppose, and, you know, before people, I suppose, Brian, suffer in silence, but is there a lot of help out there?
I think there is help. Like, I know I got help through the PFA, and you see lots of other players, current players and players who are retired, coming out and speaking about it. And it's so, like, I think it's so prevalent, if I'm being honest. But I suppose it's nobody's, you can't ask people their business. All you can say, are you okay? I'm here for you. Do you need my help? But, you know, sometimes that isn't enough. Like, for example, this year, I think it was last month, my mom and lots of my family members did the walkness to darkness into light walk.
Yeah.
For obviously suicide awareness, and my mom said when she got to the finish line, there was loads of families there with their yellow jumpers on, with pictures of their kids on their backs, just crying their eyes out. And it's something that really hit me hard. Like, I feel lucky that I have a second chance at life. Lots of other people won't.
Is it football related, Brian?
Well, for me it was the pressure and the stress of football. Not achieving, not reaching my potential, not achieving enough, not getting a reward for the amount of hard work I was putting in. It's like anything in life. You put hard work into something with the hope and the expectation of getting something in return. And for the amount of work and effort I put in, I didn't really get anything in return. And that's understandable. These things happen. But I'm ashamed of what I did, but I wouldn't... If I was in the same position, I think the same thing would have happened, and I would have ended up at this point anyway. And I'm happy now. I'm really, really happy in Manchester, away from football, and just living a happy life. And I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah. I suppose, Brian, you know, if you break your leg, if someone breaks their leg, everyone knows about it, but the deal with your situation privately is more difficult, like, isn't it?
Yeah, it's invisible.
Now, you know, as well, you'd hear people saying, you know, when a fella's on big wages, like, and not saying yourself now, but, you know, you'd hear that generally about English footballers. If they're on 60 grand a week, they'd be saying, how can he be down himself? But money's nothing to do with it. Sure, it can impact, anybody really, regardless of fame or fortune.
Yeah, yeah, it doesn't discriminate. And like, money is only money at the end of the day. Don't get me wrong, money can be very good and it can be a tool to create a better life for yourself. But at the end of the day, money is not the most important thing. Like, I can see, even now, the pain and suffering I caused my family from what I did. And I just feel so, so lucky to have a second chance at life.
Yeah, and you're brave to come on. I appreciate that, Brian. And, you know, as you told me off air before we came on, that, you know, people probably didn't want you to come on, but you told me that if it would help even one person, you would see it yourself as a success.
100%. Like, if there's anybody out there similar age to me or older or whatever, you need to ask for help. If you have diabetes or Crohn's disease or whatever, like, you're not going to just stay there and let that disease take over. You're going to go and get help. You're going to be put on the right medication or whatever. And I think mental health and illness, depression, all that stuff needs to be taken very seriously.
So how are things at the moment, Brian? I know, as you mentioned, you're living with your partner in Manchester now, is it?
Yeah, we're living in a media city in Manchester, and that's absolutely brilliant. I'm really happy here. It's a great city, and I suppose because of what I did as well, I like the privacy of it, and not a lot of people know who I am or whatever. Not that they would in Cork, I'm just saying in general. I think that's helping me with the healing process.
Now back to our special interview this Sunday with Cork GAA great Sean O'Gahalpin, who talks about Naperstig's important year, 75th anniversary for the Northside Club. O'Gahalpin tells the importance of the club and how they brought his family into their community when the O'Gahalpin family moved to Cork in 1988.
Unbeknownst to me at the time, and this is where, like, I'm very indebted to the club and the GAA and the Naperstig and the GAA, is when I come to Cork in 1988, it's very much like a white-collar society, okay? I don't see many other black kids running around the place, like, you know, kind of, well, I'm not fully black, but my mum is dark, so I take a lot of the dark features. So I won't tell a lie, when we got to Cork, there was a lot of kind of tough times in the early years trying to settle into Cork, but only from the Naperstig. I don't think myself and the family would have integrated into the north side of Cork City or into our society as seamless as probably if I had to come here and not play sport. Because what was going on was, like, when we landed in Fir Hill, I mean, I'm sure we were the talk of the we were talking the place, like, for months, like, you know. And then, like,
who are these guys gonna
who are these, like, we might as well be coming from like Pluto, Turin, or Venus, landing like in the middle of like on an north side. Of course I did, man, because I hadn't been subject to that growing up in Australia, funny enough. So the Cork note that I see is like the Australia that I grew up like back in the 80s.
They're not even rumours. I mean, I don't understand where they have come from, because that is not the situation. All that has happened is that the GAA have come out yesterday afternoon with a suggestion of a meeting, which I have welcomed, and I do indeed welcome the opportunity to sit down with them to discuss our chance of maybe holding the event in Parky Keith. But that's it. It's only a meeting, and those social media comments were completely and utterly wrong.
Do you think the GAA then maybe have come under some pressure? Because there's been a huge outcry, hasn't there? A huge outpouring from the Cork sporting public in general that the match should be held in Parky Cueve so that many more people, soccer people, can come out and watch it.
Well, I think there's no doubt that the GAA have come under pressure. There's no doubt that, you know, the GAA people themselves, you know, are very sympathetic to this. You know, I did in the early stages, as I said previously, in a previous press conference, I did actually contemplate an approach and The GAA have a predicament in terms of the rules that which they have, and they were, to be fair to the county board, were receptive, but then it went up the line, and I think they felt it was going to be in breach of a rule that couldn't be altered until it went to Congress.
Well, Michael, all good things come to those who wait. Great news for sports fans, and as the old song goes, everyone's a winner.
Yeah, Trevor, it's fantastic that the decision came out positively yesterday, and it's hard to find anyone who doesn't win in this situation, least of all, of course, the cause, which is the Liam Miller family and other, you know, Marymount Hospice and possibly others that will benefit from the event. So it's, I welcome it. It's great news all around.
It is indeed, and I know you've spoken to the Miller family as well, who must be pleased with the outcome.
Yeah, I have spoken to them yesterday after the result, and in fact I've spoken to the begin this morning because of various issues arising and the interest that's in it. And look, they're really overwhelmed by the public support, and now they're absolutely delighted that the event can be staged in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, because like everyone else, they were under pressure from people who didn't get tickets and couldn't get tickets, and you know, there was a whole momentum building up that was putting pressure on them, and being in the public domain to the extent they were, you know, obviously they appreciated everything, but at the same time, Trevor, they just weren't totally comfortable that this thing was so much in the public eye.
96FM. Let's get back to Croke Park now and join Fima McCarthy live. They're into the dying seconds, and Cork are almost there.
Dan, I'll tell you, Trevor, the referee signalled 2 minutes of added time, but he's played nearly three because there was a stoppage. Cork lead by that 1 point by Orla Cotter, scored in the 61st minute of the match. Kilkenny led 12-11. Amy O'Connor levelled it. Chloe Sigerson and Denise Gall traded points. And then a marvellous free by Orla Cotter to win, which could win the match for Cork. And I think they're going to win it now, because the ref has given a free out to Cork. And this is going to be a dramatic victory. Back-to-back titles complete what should be a memorable day for Cork Camogie in Croke Park. Remember, the lady footballers are here next week. But referee Eamon Cassidy, I've lost count of the number of frees he's given, Trevor, but certainly he gave one to Orla Cotter and she landed. He signalled 2 minutes. We're now into the 65th minute, and I think this will be the last puck of the game, and Cork will retain the O'Duffy Cup. Chloe Sigerson to kick it, to puck it. It's all over! And Cork have retained the All-Ireland title! The Liberty Insurance All-Ireland champions! Once again, Cork 14 points to Kenny 13, and the Banks resonates around this famous old stadium. Back to you in the studio, Trevor.
What a day for Cork Camogie, Fimmer. The intermediate title and now the O'Duffy Cup. It's been a great day for Cork Camogie.
Yeah, just listen, Trevor, listen. Can you hear it?
I can indeed.
Yes.
Fantastic stuff.
On the Rebels.
Just on the Republic of Ireland side of things, and again, you're talking about disharmony, and I know you've come out yourself and Liam and talked about the problems that the Republic of Ireland are having with Harry Arthur's back in the squad, incidentally.
Yes.
But Declan Rice hasn't made his mind yet. But what do you make of the whole thing with Roy and Martin and what happened with Arthur and Rice?
Well, I don't think it should have happened, Trevor. You know, I think whether you're assistant manager or even normal people, I don't think you attack people or make the statements or comments that Roy made to Arthur and Walters. And usually assistant managers are there to assist the manager. That's what they're supposed to be doing, and they're usually the one that puts an arm around your shoulder, as they say, in the setup. And that didn't happen, and ultimately, Arthur said he didn't want to be picked for the next match, which deprived Martin of a player, midfield player, we're not that strong in midfield anyway. So I hope it's all cured now, but I don't think it should have happened in the first place, Trevor.
And a chance to put the Denmark result to right next week in the Nations League, of course, in Wales after that. So two big games, two big tests coming off the Republic of Ireland.
Yeah, but football is like that. There's tests all the time, and this is a big one for the Irish team, because as I said, we were humiliated really against Denmark in the at the Aviva. So hopefully we can make up for that. You know, you're only as good as your last win, Mark, Trevor. And the good thing is, you're only as bad as your last defeat.
Yeah,
are you? That's football.
Yeah, certainly. Are you a fan of the Nations League, John? Is it a good thing for international football?
I wouldn't be too sure about it. I mean, people say, "Oh, the friendlies are no good," and but the friendlies can serve a purpose. I think a lot of greed has come into football. To be quite honest, Trevor, this is another competition that they've created because, as we know, this is UEFA and FIFA creating competitions because we only have a major competition every 2 years, and now they're putting the competition in between. To be quite honest, I think it's a moneymaker for UEFA to create this type of competition.
Okay, well, one more question before we leave it for now, John, because we're going to talk about your career extensively, as I mentioned, when you're on Cork next week. But I was interested to read, you probably heard this before, but there was a journalist in the Times in England, and going back to your time when that infamous game, the cup final against Chelsea, he said that he watched it back and how the game has changed, that if you were to apply today's rules and today's laws, that that match might have finished 5-6.
Well, there's quite a few matches could have finished 5 or 6 in my time, because you know you have to commit grievous bodily harm to get a yellow card in those days. So times have changed for the better, I must say. But it was a tougher game. But there's one thing about the game in those days: there was no people feigning injuries and rolling around and getting players booked or sent off. So there was a bit of honesty about it as well in that particular way. I must say, now it frustrates me. And a lot of people watching football, you see somebody, you know, holding their head and haven't even been hit on the head nowadays. But again, things are a lot better in many ways than they were in my day.
Cork City made it back-to-back wins on Friday night when they beat UCD by 2-0. Two clean sheets in a row for Cork City as they try to work their way up the table. It was the first home match under the new management team of John Cotter, Alan Bennett and Colin Healy. And after the match, I got some Cork City fan reaction at Turner's Cross.
We're getting there, you know, we're getting there. Small steps at a time, but a win is a win.
Another clean sheet. What do you think of it?
Yeah, definitely. Enjoyed it, and hopefully the crowds will start coming back now as well.
Oh, I'm very pleased. Win is a win. 2 in a row, which is unusual this season, unfortunately. We're down where we are, but we'll come back, hopefully.
What did you make of the sacking of John Caulfield?
I can't comment on that because I played with Caulfield a long time ago in Gaelic football more than anything else. But he was a great manager, great success. The half the trophies that Cork City have won, he's won them. And fair play to him. The double in 2017 was fantastic. And I'm wishing the best.
Yeah, brilliant. It's nice to see a professional performance from us, the type of comfortable win that we should be getting.
Is John Cotter the man then to bring us forward, or would you like to see him bring in another manager at the end of the season maybe?
I don't know. You'd love to see Cotter get the chance. He's a lovely fella. He's been around football for a long time, worked wonders at Avondale. We modestly dismissed him himself the other day, but I definitely see him with a shot till the end of the year. Keep winning and you get the job. That's as simple as that.
What did you think of the performance?
Very good. A lot more positive, right? It's the first time now, I'd say, all season that I've kind of walked away from the ground feeling happy and relaxed and not like, you know, thinking we just dodged a bullet or god damn it, that was awful. You know, it was a good performance, right? Players seemed happy, a lot of confidence, so it seemed better atmosphere.
Yeah, that was the supporters' reaction after the match on Friday night at Turner's Cross. Some interesting views indeed.